Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 13, Episode 3 of Das Daily Zeitgeist!
Yeah.
January 10th, 2018. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Bojack Hostman.
Ooh.
Courtesy of Kyle Welch. And I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Gray my name, when no one is around you, you listen to the Zeitgeist, why you trying to change?
Thank you so much, Nappy City Giant, for that, a.k.a. You know I like singing, because I'm a repressed singer at heart.
The guitar playing was great, too. Well done. Thank you so much.
That was actually, I'm not going to lie, that wasn't an actual nylon string guitar. That I was playing Korg Triton, and that was MIDI. So anyway, just full disclosure.
I don't know what any of that means. And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by returning guest and the host of the just-launched podcast Culture Kings, Edgar Montplaisir.
Boingo, hey! Boingo.
Hey-o.
Boingo, Boingo is back.
Yeah, boingo, Boingo indeed.
How you feeling? How you feeling?
I'm feeling good.
Launch day.
Yeah, it's launch day.
Culture Kings.
First episode great.
Twitter is loving it. By Twitter, I mean that one dude who's been tweeting by the minute of every minute of the podcast.
And really?
Blowing up my timeline, which is dope.
Live tweeting the podcast?
Like, literally every minute he's had an opinion about it.
Hey,
good or bad?
They're all positive.
Oh, good. That's great.
See,
but it's also 40 tweets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So RIP your mentions.
Edgar, what's something from your search history that is revealing about who you are as a human being?
Oh, I looked up You're My Darling, You're My Angel from that Shaggy song.
Oh, yeah.
I was arguing with my friend which one came first, whether he said You're My Angel, then You're My Darling, or if he said You're My Darling, You're My Angel. I was right. He says, you're my angel, you're my darling.
Angel.
But then he says, angel after darling. What is that song about?
I don't know.
It's about the afterlife, I believe.
he's just in love with a dead body.
Right. Edgar, what's something that's overrated?
American shows on Netflix. Shows that Netflix makes that are in America are overrated.
Like what?
Well, I don't want to say Master of None, so I'll excuse that one, but Disjointed.
Oh, my God. Terrible.
The Ranch, Ozark, like any American show that
they
make.
You don't like Ozark?
Nah, I don't really like Ozark.
I tried to get, everybody was saying like, hey, Ozark's really good. I got through the first episode, and I was like, oh, that was cool, and then I just lost momentum.
It's like, have you ever had baked Lay's? Like when they like
no,
make Lay's
chips? No,
because
I'm not a fucking psycho.
Exactly. That's Ozark for Breaking Bad fans.
Oh, shit.
It's like, yo, you want Breaking Bad light?
Yeah, right. The stakes are real low. It's like, we got to move to this weird lake town.
It's a comedian from a sitcom, but now he's a bad guy in a family drama.
You know what shows are crazy, though? And I was thinking about maybe even doing this on a segment, because I watched the weirdest shit on Netflix, like stuff I didn't even know existed. There's a show called Under Arrest, and it's like the Canadian version of Cops. And it was clearly shot in the 90s, but for whatever reason, they package it now. It is the most raw, like, there's fun stuff of, like, really polite, like, one thing is the cops are so polite to the people, I'm like, yo, this is amazing, this is a fantasy show.
Right.
Then there are some fucking savage incidents. I'm sorry, you might have to bleep this out. This dude straight up tried to, how do I put this very scientifically, castrate himself with a tin can lid, and they showed everything. This is on Netflix. This is on Netflix.
Well, that's what I was going to say. My underrated thing was any international show on Netflix, like those shows that they pick up. They're insane. Like, I was just watching End of the Fucking World. That show is dope as fuck. And, like, I think Netflix has a really cool plan where they, like, buy up all these, like, English or Dutch shows from their networks and just put it out to Americans because they don't have access to it. And so there's some great content out there that we're sleeping on.
Oh, you got to watch People Just Do Nothing. It's not a Netflix exclusive, but that's a show they did real quick. They took from the UK and put out here. They won a BAFTA last year. Shout outs to my boys, A Corrupt FM, Sipa, Hugo, all y'all
what
I see out there.
What is People Just Do Nothing?
People Just Do Nothing is about, it's like The Office, but for like the garage music scene. So these guys are like, they have a pirate radio station, and the one dude is like an MC, and then his boys are like the DJs.
I'm
but
into
like,
it.
It's like they're the most broke down dudes trying to get in the game. So like it's just done at such a low level, but the stakes are so high to these guys. And like, they really did the mockumentary well. So it's dope.
I'm into it. That sounds so much better than Disjointed already.
Like, oh yeah. I'm I can't, they're doing a second season.
Man, they're going to do like 8 seasons of it, bro.
Really?
Like, it's, I don't know. I can't stand it.
I thought people,
why are Americans like, we have this opportunity to use this streaming platform to do anything. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's no one stopping us. Netflix is really chill. and the best that we can offer is disjointed and bright. That hurts my feelings.
Right, right. Getting emotional?
I just can't. Edgar, you're the person who watched all of Mindhunters on the first day that it came out and then came in and were like, you haven't seen Mindhunters?
Mindhunters,
dude, I thought you had
good.
A job here. What's wrong with you? You made me feel... Went home. I was like, God damn, I guess I got to watch this show.
It was good, though.
There are some exceptions, then.
There are some exceptions. Anything that David Fincher has his hands on is good.
Favorite TV show of all time?
Of all time?
Yeah.
The Wire.
Yeah. Okay. That's definitely a good answer.
And just, I want to shout out to my girlfriend for being an idiot and not wanting to watch past season two. That's crazy.
Wait, what?
Past season two of The Wire?
She finished season two and said, this show isn't for me. And I'm like,
no.
It's a mistake. Yeah. It's a mistake. Keep
She's
going.
She's like, why was it at the docks?
I do love the twist at the end of season two. But
yeah.
Season four is my favorite. I watched season four before I watched any other season.
I'm sorry to spoil it for everyone, but the twist at season two is that white people can't carry a story.
All right. We're trying to take a sample of the ideas that are out there changing the world. We talk about pop culture, the news, just try to take the temperature of the global shared consciousness of the human species. We talk about tabloids because those headlines are being dumped into the brains of millions of people every day in the grocery aisle. We might have to start talking to super producer Anna Hosni about The Bachelor, since that is apparently everybody watches The Bachelor besides me. But we like to open up by asking our guest, what is a myth? What's something that everybody seems to believe is true that you know to be false?
Well, this one is very personal to me, but I'm not African. I'm not African at all. I'm not also not African American. But a lot of people will stop me on the street and be like, oh, hey, like, you know, like start trying to talk to me and stuff like that. And I'm like, are Uber drivers? And I'm like, I'm sorry, dog. I'm from Haiti.
Yeah. You're not Nigerian.
I'm not Nigerian. Yeah. I'm not. Yeah.
You're
not
with that jollof rice.
Nope. Not at all.
You're not eating fufu and banku.
I'm closer to Hispanic than I would be to Africa, like, just in terms of like Haitian culture and like,
the food
that they eat and the stuff that they do.
And y'all sharing the island with the DR.
Exactly. But yeah, like, and now it's also something that, like, man, Haitian Independence Day was depressing to like see like people like post up like pictures of like Black Panther and be like, Haitian Independence Day has got me so excited for Black Panther. I'm like, Black Panther is in Africa. Haiti is here. We could go there. Like, people just don't know where it is or know anything about it.
Right, right, right.
And it hurts. First independent black nation, and nobody knows where it is.
Well, see, now you put people on the game.
That's exactly right. Look it up. Toussaint, look
so
him
Haiti,
up.
Not in Africa?
Not That's... in Africa. I am not African. Please stop asking me about it.
Would you
it.
Say that you're ancestral? What's the fucking word I'm looking for?
Yeah, I mean,
you're
if you
a
trace
descendant
it,
of Africans.
Of course.
Clearly,
of
right.
course. Of course.
100%. But national, you're not a African national.
No, I'm not. Yes. What I mean is I'm not an African national. And I don't know. I mean, people do get into the debate of African Americans a lot. It was a debate that my family got into over Christmas, which ended up so nicely. We all hugged and kissed at the end.
Wait, what do you mean? What debate?
Whether Haitian people are African Americans or not. It's like a very big like debate. Jamaicans also are in this debate. Because I think the way that we think about it is African Americans are descendants of American slaves.
Right.
But
that's my that would be my understanding, too.
Exactly.
You are Haitian because you come from Haiti.
But my brother very, very much so disagreed to the point of near violence and like it
by
was
like
a big
hugging
debate.
And kissing.
Do you feel like it was diminished by saying you're Haitian American versus African American?
He just feels like, yeah, I guess his argument is that like by nature of it, we are also descendants of slaves. They just weren't American slaves.
Right.
So
sure.
Why shouldn't we also be African American? Haiti is in America.
Yeah.
But I think African American implies United States of America. That's at least to my understanding. That's what I feel like it implies is United States of America, not America at large. Because if that was the case, then Mexican-American wouldn't be a thing.
Yeah, well, look, these are debates that are meant to be had in the home.
Yeah, they're great debates on Thanksgiving. any white family, go for it. I give you permission to try to have that debate and not end up in violence.
Should we move right to the Andrew Mellon Foundation?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good moment because one good news for African-Americans is that we are a step closer to finding out a little bit more about our ancestry, our lineage, because the Andrew Mellon Foundation has awarded Michigan State University with a $1.5 million grant, which will, quote, allow the creation of the project Enslaved, the People of the Historic Slave Trade, which is an online hub that links data collections on slavery and enslaved people from multiple universities. So in a way that basically you can try and find out sort of where your family may have come from. Right. Because before that, I remember when I was a kid and Ancestry.com first came out, it was always like when my great-great-grandfather came over from France,
right?
Like blah, blah, blah. And now I feel so connected. And I was like, damn, that was cool. And then all it took me was a second to be like, wait a second. I know where my mom's family comes from, Japan, but my dad being black, that is a completely – there's a question mark.
It was very European-specific.
Like. Yeah, it was very much so. And then so, like, the only thing we know are, like, sort of just shared oral histories. But now to think that there are actual, like, historical documents being, like, aggregated to help people kind of, like, really trace their roots, I think it's pretty big. Good news for African-Americans.
I only want to know if that dude from PBS tells me. That's the only way I want
to
know.
To find out, each results package is pre-recorded.
Yeah.
So what happens, is that the same deal with 23andMe? Like there's just a question mark?
Well, no, I mean, I think
23andMe is like, they'll like give you a map.
It's genetics, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they can tell you sort of like genetically, you're sub-Saharan African or things like that.
So how's Ancestry.com work? They like go back and do research into your...
They use documents.
Yeah, they can use like immigration documents from like Ellis Island and things like, this is how you got here.
Oh, wow.
But like, you know, there weren't many receipts for the slave trade, or at least none that were like organized in a way that you could... actually be like, oh, wow, like we may have descended from this person who came off this ship that poured into this specific place. So that's really interesting.
Because wasn't that hard. It went right back to my grandpa. But that's as far, because he's the one who came into the States.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then my dad came. Like, I could see their immigration documents.
Right.
But besides that, like, I couldn't go back and be like, all right, how did we end up in Haiti? Like,
right.
You know, like that.
Right.
And exactly. I think there is one for anyone with African who are descended from anyone from Africa to find out more specifically what country or what more specific region in Africa you came from. Connect you to like a country.
Right. Yeah.
Which
I
would really love to do. I'm pretty sure that is a thing. I felt like Questlove or somebody was talking about it. Or like I saw a video where like Erykah Badu found out she was like Cameroonian or something.
Oh, wow.
So the truth is out there.
Yeah.
Right. All right. Let's move on to big news. Stevie B, Slappy Steve. Is out, not just at the White House. He's no longer running Breitbart. He has resigned because his financial backers, his Medici family, who are the Mercers, decided that, you know, he was too much of a loose cannon. They were no longer going to fund Breitbart as long as he was in charge. And so Breitbart had to let go their main dude.
He had it all.
He really did.
He thought he was king crap of shit mountain.
Right.
You know, and he was like, we're going to turn this whole establishment upside down, blah, blah, blah.
How crazy do you have to be a loose cannon at Breitbart?
I know.
Like, exactly.
That's some wild shit.
All you got to do is make the president look wild fucking stupid.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the line, you know, like he had some choice words about the Trump family and that got him in all the hot water. But also like his stock was falling.
Right.
True. Like, true.
The Roy Moore loss was bad.
Very.
Like, losing those gubernatorial races was bad because a lot of people who weren't necessarily running on that Bannonism, Trumpism platform tried it out, did not work well for them. So it's kind of showing like, oh, is this effective anymore? Like, I think it was effective to a point, but now it's clearly starting to fade. And like, you're starting to see the fallout from it because the Bannonism, Trumpism, whatever you want to call it, platform has been really toxic for like establishment Republicans. That's why like something like I'm pretty sure 31 seats in the House are going to be up for grabs because people are retiring or running for different office. So that's
Democrats
crazy.
Need how many to win how many
24
of those?
Seats. If the Democrats win 24 seats 24. In the midterms, then they can take back the House. Like Senate's obviously much closer, but like if we can get the House back, that's pretty big.
That's big time.
Yeah. Joe Arpaio, who is the most Bannon candidate of all, has announced that he's running for Senate. So that'll be a referendum on Bannonism and whether Bannonism can survive without Trump.
But if you look right now, no senator, no sitting Republican senator really wants to give a quote on Arpaio's candidacy, because that shows you how they even know these Bannon candidates, like these Roy Moores and Arpaio's, like they're like third rail type candidates. Yeah. You really don't want to get near because they say they're fucking crazy racist,
right?
And nobody's here for that.
I want him to go full in on it though. Like if he's gonna run, like no Republicans are gonna back him. He's not gonna be on the establishment. I want his like campaign model to be like, niggers, do we need them? Like, that's like, go for it. Like, you know what I mean?
Just bring out all the reasons.
They're not going to back you. Like, go for it, bro. Like, roll up in, like, that Klan hood and, like, just be like, we're doing this shit.
I mean, he already did the foreword for Steven Seagal's book.
Right.
So, you know, Joe Arpaio is a very busy man.
Yeah.
And he'll be the oldest dude. I think he'll be the oldest senator.
How old is he?
He's like 84.
Jesus Christ.
My prediction is that he doesn't even get to Election Day because there's a profile of him that I think the New York Times did that's just very sad. Like they go to visit him at his house and he's just like waiting for his phone to ring. And he's just like this lonely guy who's like doddering on about how like famous people used to call him and stuff. And it was just like, yo, man, this guy's like, I don't know. It just seemed like this. It seems based on that profile, this seems like kind of a desperate move to be like, remember me?
Yeah, because that was it on like the Daily or something where you could hear the audio where it literally sounds like visiting like your great great grandfather who's in a home. And
right.
It was kind of like, will you stay a little bit longer?
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. She said that she had gone to visit him like before and could only get like 30 minutes of his time like 10 years ago. And then this time he was like, would you stay longer?
Yeah.
I'm so alone.
So alone.
It's like, Jesus Christ.
But then I also think about it like, I don't know, like who's exciting on the Democrat side? Is there anyone like early on who's like pretty exciting?
In terms of what?
Like running for senator. Is there anybody cool?
In that race, it's going to be, I mean, I know the real big fight in Arizona is going to be over that Republican pick, like during the primary. Because you have Martha McSally, who's like an establishment. That's who like the establishment GOP people want to be the candidate, not psychopath Arpaio. But anyway, it's just showing that basically Bannon he blew up the party.
Yeah.
And
there's no
it's
message.
So
there's
fractured.
No
yeah. You have establishment people and then you have straight up psycho ethno nationalist people who like are just running on some trash platforms.
Yeah, my guess would be no, the Democrats don't have anyone cool running for Senate because senators are just generally not cool. The Senate fucking sucks.
That's true.
All right. We have to move on to Benghazi.
Benghazi.
We have quite a few updates, actually. Stan Lee, late stage sex criminal up. He was apparently, you know, harassing nurses. Is that right?
Yeah.
Like
which asking
is like the women who are around
trying to
him
grope
at this
him
point.
And talk asking for like head in the shower.
This should not be a surprise. His role in every single Marvel movie is creepy dude. That's like all he does is like, hey, I'm getting creepy in Iron Man.
Right.
I'm being creepy in the Hulk.
It's just interesting because like when I think it was Sophie, our project manager, she was like, yo, Stan Lee. And I thought, oh my God, is there about to be like a history of crazy Stan Lee shit? And it's just like, it's just him and his senility just not having, just old men not being able to control themselves.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's similar to George H.W. It's like, how should we feel about this? Is it just like he's kind of lost the ability to control himself? But at the same time, I feel bad for women.
How do you correct a dirty old man?
Right.
You take a page out of The Giver and you just put him down.
What?
Y'all never read The Giver? They do a party and then they kill the
kid.
Old people.
Oh, whoa. So you're saying send out Stan Lee?
What's Stan Lee giving us besides cameos in Avengers?
Yeah, I mean, he did his thing. He did his thing. He gave us all the source material.
If y'all don't want them, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's past his prime.
Yeah, no. Old people should be put down and
not all of
shared
them.
For food.
But if they're in their senile years just grabbing people, like, hey.
Yeah, friend. Or just, you know, like, confuse the shit out of them and, like, give them, like, robot nurses.
Absolutely.
They think that are human or something. I don't know. They're just.
Well, that's given into his desire.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, you know, what do you do? What are you doing when someone goes into senility like that? It's like, you'd imagine that's because they have diminished mental capacity, not because they're, like. I mean, maybe they were fighting these urges lifelong, and then finally, like, they don't have the faculty to do that. I don't know.
Yeah. Or they're just from a different time when people were just like, ah, that's just Stan being Stan, and women were cool with it too, which brings us to a French actress.
Catherine Deneuve.
French actresses
have,
you know, put out a letter saying that they, you know, think the Me Too movement has gone too far. And they're, you know, they don't really get into specifics. I guess they say that, you know, men are being forced to resign because they, put their hand on someone's leg and like sent people sexual texts, like almost as if like, can you believe it?
Right.
It's kind of weird. I don't know. We wanted to bring in super producer Anna Hosnier for this discussion. Anna, I mean, what do you think of this letter? I know you read it.
I don't think it's good.
Thank you, Anna.
all right, and that was super just Anna was you.
I find it very like tone deaf.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're missing the entire point of the movement.
Right.
And to say, so there's this quote in the letter that says men have been sanctioned in their professions, forced to resign, etc., when their only wrongdoing was touching someone's knee, trying to steal a kiss, talking about intimate things during a professional dinner, or sending messages with a sexual connotation to a woman who wasn't attracted to them. That is all inappropriate behavior.
But it's right. Only four of them.
It doesn't matter. It is that. Yeah,
it's
I
wild.
Should feel comfortable at my workplace that someone is not allowed.
Right.
To creep on me in any sort of way. So that statement itself, just to me, I think explains that they just do not get it.
Well, it seems right. Also too that she's almost talking about society at large, not the way men and women are interacting in a professional workplace setting.
Right.
Like, cause it's like this whole, like, it's, we're slipping into this puritanical thing and sexual expression will be completely lost. It's like, yo, express yourself as sexually as you want to, like outside of work with consenting adults. When you're at work, be fucking professional. Nobody is here to see your dick. Nobody's here to get pushed into a fucking refrigerator and get fucking assaulted. Like that. What? I don't understand that. And also, let's be real here. Catherine Deneuve is like a Roman Polanski defender too. She's not quite the. I don't know. I don't want to like. I get. No, I don't get what she's trying to say.
It sounds like a respectability politics a little bit. Kind of like it's like, you know, like the same thing when black dudes are just like, you know, I get pulled over all the time. And I've never been shot by a cop. Like, it's like them saying, like, you know, like, just put, like, you can just not say anything and just put up with it and be a strong woman. It's just like, nah, I believe that they should have the right to go to work and just chill and, like, you know, not have some old dude talk about what dress they're wearing and, like, you know, like, ask sexual questions and shit like that.
Yeah, that doesn't make us prude. That just makes us professional. We just don't. I'm here to make my money and go home and not have an old man touch my shoulder and give me a massage.
Or
that
try
I didn't
and steal a
for.
Kiss.
That's absolutely inappropriate.
Didn't she say that Roman Polanski, like the word rape should not be used?
She said, I always found the word rape was excessive in the case of him raping a 13-year-old girl at a party in L.A.
So does the 13-year-old girl.
Yeah, I mean, what was a better word than rape? Like
surprise
sex.
Yeah.
Like what the fuck does, I mean, I don't know. I think it's
but I wonder, I also wonder how much of it is, I didn't get a look at, or I didn't know who all the actresses are who have signed on to this. I know it was
100
of them.
But it include journalists, filmmakers, writers, and intellectuals.
Okay. It seemed like Catherine Deneuve was the biggest name though, which is why. Like, even when I look through articles trying to find who these other people were, like, sort of a cursory search, like, hers is the one who you see all the time pop up.
So you got a pop album coming out.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, I'm curious what the average age of that list is, because...
I mean, I understand that France, it's a country that's, you know, they're into their sexuality, cool, you can be as sexual as you want, but that doesn't lessen our right to not want it in the workplace. Like, we just don't want it.
Yeah.
It's
not
that
have
simple.
It forced on you.
Well, of course. And yeah, culture, like, people in Europe are much more affectionate in general in public than Americans. Cause this is a lot of puritanical belief systems have come into this country and spread in our culture. But yeah, all we're saying is don't fuck around when you're trying to work, when you're trying to be professional, and don't leverage your power in the workplace to take advantage of a woman or man or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what the issue is. And I think, I don't know if she's conflating that with something else. I don't know. It's
hard.
Well,
that's the thing, is to say any of that is okay, that will escalate. To tell a man, it's okay if you steal a kiss from me at work, that's not ever going to end well.
No. Right.
Like
right.
that, if you tell a dude, if you, what is it? Well, I won't get into that, but I just.
Were you going to say if you give a nigga an inch?
Yeah.
Is that what you were going to
say?
I got you. She was going to say if you give a nigga an inch.
I think she would say if you give a moose a muffin.
Yeah.
Great children's book.
You ever pick a pancake?
All I'm saying is you can't set that kind of precedent and expect it not to escalate in a way that will be incredibly harmful towards women and even men in the workplace. So
steal a kiss will be in to steal some head.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right.
I'd read that book. It's like, if you give your boss a kiss.
There was also some Benghazi action on Colbert with his interview about James Franco, but we'll get into that later on this week. We are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. And we're back. So I wanted to talk about this story slash defense I've seen from conservative outlets like Drudge. Anytime you go to Drudge, half his headlines are the words great again, colon, and then like stocks rocket to an all-time high. Or basically, you know, saying that now that Trump is president, the stock market is outstanding and all markets are outstanding and consumer confidence is at an all-time high. Which is true. I think we are at an all-time high in the stock market. But there was a really interesting chart on CNN where they showed all the different presidents since, I think, FDR, maybe even before him, like where the stock market started and then how it did during their first year. And under Trump, the stock market picked up by 27%, which is really good. It's actually the fourth best of modern presidents. Truman is third, and Obama is actually the second best ever.
Only what, to FDR?
Yeah, only to FDR, who was coming out of the
literally out of the ashes.
Right. But Obama brought it up 33%, which is kind of crazy because so they say that mostly your first year you're kind of coasting off the momentum of the previous administration. Obama came into office during a financial crisis, and you actually see during the first couple months of his administration, the stock market is trending down. And then all of a sudden it just turns around. He like pulls it out of a fucking tailspin, and it ended up going up 33%, which and way more when you look at like how far down it went. Like 2 months into his administration, Trump's has just gone steadily up ever since he took office. And people have speculated that's probably just, you know, he's not totally fucking things up that were going well under Obama, which that's not the message that I had been getting based on, you know, some conservative outlets.
Well, you got to hype your boy, you know what I'm saying? Like, you got to make it look like your boy was responsible for it, even though he wasn't. And I think that's kind of what's annoying about this whole, like, great again thing is that they're taking these things that Trump has nothing to do with and attributing it to him. Like, you know what I'm saying? And it's just propaganda at this point, really.
Yeah, I mean, totally.
If the stock market's doing so good, how come his polling numbers are, his approval ratings are in the shitter?
Right. So that's the other thing, is that there's never been somebody who's had this good of an economy and this good of a stock market who didn't have just outstanding approval ratings.
Oh, like they're just completely upside down?
Yeah.
Right.
And his approval ratings, like he has somehow managed to become way less popular as the stock market has continued to go up.
Yeah. I mean, aside from reforming the tax code, I don't see much real action coming from this administration.
Right.
So it's hard to say that this is a continuation of the previous administration, like that it isn't a continuation of the previous administration.
Well, I like analogies. And I'm going to go ahead and use one right here. I think Trump is like someone that you're in a relationship with and the sex is good.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good. It's enjoyable sex. But the moment that sex is over, he opens his mouth and he starts talking and he starts saying shit. He starts making jokes.
This is you having sex with a man?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's great. I mean, the sex was great. And then he starts talking. He starts saying shit. He's, like, making jokes here and there. He starts eating Big Macs all the time.
In bed. Yeah. In bed.
Just yelling at the TV.
I like analogies, too, but this one is really distracting because I'm picturing myself having sex with Donald Trump.
It's all good, man. Keep riding out. Keep riding out till we get to the end. He's spilling food all over the bed all the time.
And then just like, yeah, I have to go. I got work in the morning.
And you're like, hey, do you want to come hang out with my friends? He's like, no, I'm out golfing all the time. I'm golfing. And then it's just like, yeah, this sex is good, but everything else about this dude is trash. And I think that's exactly how the American people feel. It's like, all right, this economy is cool, but I can get good economy from somebody else.
Yeah.
Somebody else could give me good economy.
But sadly, like, not everyone is experiencing the benefit of this economy, right? Like, it's people that are trading on Wall Street. Like, these things haven't actually trickled down, to use a shitty phrase, to the, like, general population where they're like, holy shit, man, like, my fucking boss, like, yo, they changed minimum wage in my state. Or, like, I have better healthcare. Like, I don't know. It's hard to say, like, how do you equate that with the improvement of, like, quality of life for people that aren't in the top 1% or the people – because I think – I don't know what the stat is. Do you know, like, what percentage of Americans actually even trade on the stock market? It's something like 35 or 40% or something, isn't it?
Yeah. As of 2013, the top 1% of households by wealth owned nearly 38% of all stock shares, according to research by NYU.
So 99% is fighting over the potential benefit of the remaining. You know, so it's hard to say, like, those are cool numbers, but
yeah,
that hasn't affected me in any way. Like, and I'm, so it's hard to say that, wow, like, we owe this all to him or whatever. I mean, these are cool figures that are indicative of, like, how the economy is operating, but I don't know if I feel like a quality of life index kind of thing would be more effective to, like, judge how maybe people are feeling about their own lives,
especially for such a populist president, like, for someone who, like
I mean, he campaigned on populism, but
For someone who's just like, I'm gonna make all of your lives better, and it's just like, dope, it seems like you're only making your friends better.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the tax cut did see some initial gifts to employees from AT&T, but then AT&T, like, fired a whole bunch of employees like a month later.
Also, it's like a fraction of what their profits are, and, like, a fraction of what they spent on lobbying too. So
right. So I don't know. I agree that, you know, quality of life seems to be something that we should be kind of keeping an eye on.
Let me ask y'all a question: would y'all rather have a chill president with a bad economy or a trash-ass president with a great economy?
The looming threat of him killing us all is, I would basically trade that going away for almost anything.
So you would rather have
especially
a cool girlfriend or a cool partner who gives you bad dick than have a trash-ass partner but gives you, like, the best dick you ever had?
As long as they're not putting me at risk.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, he's giving everybody that dick.
Well, no, I mean,
getting back into bed with me. I don't see it. Don't put me
in. It's amazing, bro.
No, because, look, the idea that even that I've read articles that he is trying to figure out, like, a bloody nose strategy with North Korea, like, of doing a very, like, pinpoint strike in North Korea, but, like, not induce a war, is crazy to me. And I don't even want anybody who's even fucking thinking like that. Like,
No.
Yeah, it's almost like
I'll
being
be celibate
with an abusive spouse.
Yes, I will, like, be celibate.
Yeah, he's great all the time, and then sometimes he almost kills me.
Yeah,
all right.
It's
there's
a good analogy, Jack.
It's a killer analogy. And then there is the Trump story. He had this bipartisan meeting about DACA, where, you know, he wanted to have the cameras come in, show him kind of presiding over a meeting and being important, and that ended up backfiring a little bit.
Yeah, he was in there basically trying to be like, hey, we need border security, I need $18 billion for this wall that I said Americans wouldn't pay for, blah blah blah, and he's like, and that's how we'll get DACA done. And then, you know, Dianne Feinstein, she hit him with the Jedi mind trick and basically got him to say that he was open to a clean DACA bill, just to make sure to protect these dreamers, and then we can move on to comprehensive immigration reform. And her trick, this is how she pulled off her mindfuckery. She said, I don't know how you would feel about this, but I would like to ask the question, what about a clean DACA bill now with the commitment that we go into a comprehensive immigration reform procedure? Trump goes, I have no problem. That's when all the Republicans in the room went, I'm sorry. My man does not know what the fuck he's talking about. Do not take that as a quote. I'm pretty sure the White House struck that line from their transcript of the meeting because they don't want him on wax saying like he has no problem with the clean DACA bill. It was just kind of a funny moment where you could tell he didn't know what side he's playing on.
Yeah, he wasn't following the conversation.
And Kevin McCarthy had to like fully step in like a nanny. And was like, Mr. President, I think you need to be clear, though. I think that Senator Feinstein is asking here. Like, he had to really make sure he knew what was going on. So
clean DACA bill just means nothing else attached to it.
Yeah, it's like, let's just vote on this. Let's get this done. And then let's move on. Then let's really talk about comprehensive immigration reform.
Yeah. That's crazy.
It's just funny that his whole, like, he cannot be by himself with Democrats because he'll probably agree to a lot of stuff without people reminding him what platform, like what side he's on ideologically.
My goodness.
He just wants to be liked.
I get that. I'm that way sometimes.
So also during that meeting, that was during the same meeting.
That was during the meeting.
So also during that meeting, DiFi, as Miles calls her, dropped the GOP's big scheme to discredit Christopher Steele and Fusion.
Yeah. Like, while she's talking to him, her office releases the full transcript of the testimony of the Fusion GPS co-founder Glenn Simpson. To put it very simply, right, last week there was an op-ed by the guys at Fusion GPS that were basically saying, please release the transcript. You will see what we said, and that will show you that the senators know the truth from as we know it to be true, but are still saying something completely different, which is this idea that because Fusion had a Russian client for a completely unrelated project, that they were somehow connected to the Steele dossier and Hillary Clinton creating it. And so by releasing the transcript, that shows like once and for all, this is the testimony that they gave to these senators. So what they're saying is completely counter to what they told them, and they are just spreading blatant misinformation about the origin of the Steele dossier and how the Steele dossier may or may not have affected the FBI's investigation, which – in the transcript, they note that when Christopher Steele approached the FBI said, we already know.
Right.
So that's the reason why Chuck Grassley, it's easier to push this fake bullshit when there's no proof, there's no record of it that people can read.
Right.
And if you keep that in the dark, then it's easy to be like, well, that's what we know. And now that it's out, it's hard to – now how are you going to defend that? And to top that off, right, Lindsey Graham made the first criminal referral of the entire Russia investigation – to investigate Christopher Steele when there's no reason to at all. That's purely just posturing to try and reinforce this narrative that like, oh, we're looking into Christopher Steele because, you know, he looks like a shady guy. And that's why she's like, no, look at this transcript. Like, look at what they came in and said. There's no reason to look at him.
Right.
There's none at all.
Right. They were saying that he lied to them about like possibly what he told to the media or something. But basically the whole strategy on the Republican side is to tie this investigation up into looking at shit that doesn't matter so that nothing happens of substance.
Yeah. And when you couple that with Michael Cohen, Trump's lawyer, who, like suing BuzzFeed and Fusion GPS for this dossier, you know they are sweating.
Right.
Like why what's with this full frontal attack like that if it's all bullshit?
Right.
Like it's, you know, they're showing their hand.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. All right. I wanted to talk about this Starbucks story. There's a Starbucks in the Atlanta area where a woman who worked there posted on Facebook. I think she was a black woman. And she posted that she was spitting in white customers' drinks and putting blood in the jelly.
Yeah, like dog feces in the hot chocolate.
Right. Of white children. So she posted this on Facebook and it went viral.
Lacey, what are you doing?
And it went viral and that Starbucks had to close down because they were getting death threats, towards this woman who it turns out was a fictional character.
No.
Made up by some hoaxers. And this is something we saw. We were following during Hurricane Harvey. We were not only following the hurricane here at the Daily Zeitgeist, but we were also following this trend where people were creating fake accounts, like of looters. It was like
the Houston Loot Crew or something like
Houston
that.
Houston Loot Crew, Harvey Loot Crew. And it was, you know, clearly people trying to talk like, you know, thugs and looters and like saying like just ridiculous shit. And
it was so clearly a concoction of people who are definitely not black.
Right.
Because based off the tweets, it was like I think they heard like a old Mace album. Right.
Gang, 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 gang. We're going to pick up a whirlpool.
It didn't even have gang. Machine. No, no, no. You have to even go back 20 years.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like me and my boys are about to go loot. Or something. Right. It was just like
B-O-Y-Z.
Real,
me and the cats.
Yeah.
Right. It was really bad. So this is a trend that we're seeing where, you know, people on that side of things are
the racist side of things
are posting fake stories and like hoaxes. And, you know, this also happened with Comet Pizza.
Yeah.
In Washington, D.C. And resulted in somebody bringing an assault rifle and firing off 3 shots because he was there to save the children. Who they had alleged there was this big hoax alleging
Democratic pedophile sex ring, you know?
Right. That was being run out of this pizzeria.
They're grasping at straws.
What was that nigga thought he was going to do? Just shoot the whole place and walk out with the kids?
I think he was going to ramble the shit out of that place. I'm here for the kids. I'm save these kids.
We're going to go with the man with the big ass gun. He's here to save us.
It's wild. Yeah, I don't know. It's just.
What is their intention for doing these things? Because I remember I saw one like maybe 2 years ago where a lot of people were coming at this white woman for yelling at a black Barnes & Noble's worker about not having a specific book from an author. And like she's like yelling at her and ranting at her. And everyone's just like, see, the white woman can do this and they can act out and stuff like that. But what it turned out was it was a fictional character and she was promoting a live stage version of Misery. So, like, it was a woman pretending to kind of be, like, Kathy Bates' character and stuff like that. So, like, that just turned into, like, a bunch of people, like, you know, just being upset with her and being like, this is white woman act like this all the time. They're so mad. So, like, are any of these people, like, characters trying to, like, promote something?
No, this
something?
Is definitely not viral marketing. I think this is purely to stoke the flames of racial hatred. Mm. Like, to just be like, you see? Black people are working at Starbucks and they're shitting in our hot chocolate.
Yeah.
They're bleeding in our jam and they're spitting in our coffee. And so, and that's why we can't trust them still. Like, I feel like that's the only purpose something like this serves.
Yeah.
It's just to create more. It's ridiculous. It's just trolling of the highest order. Yeah. I mean, unless this is the worst viral marketing campaign for a coffee bean. Like, I have no idea.
You're like, coffee bean sitting there, be like, yo, we got them niggas this time, bro. Yo, we got them niggas this time.
But I think it's just straight up, it just, you know, they're exploiting people's racial distrust.
Well, I gotta applaud that effort. That's so much work. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's so much work.
But see,
that's the
thing. Like, I was surprised back during the Harvey thing that they were putting in that much work and kind of doing this whole, it was just a lot of forethought and planning and, you know, just it's kind of ingenious, like, what they're doing because it's hard to know that something is fake and, you know, people aren't going through and fact-checking people on Facebook.
Yeah,
so,
right.
That we had also seen this story where somebody was talking about how fake news and shit wasn't as big a deal as people assumed because only 6% of the stories read by the average Trump voter were fake news, essentially. But I feel like that's misleading because that 6% are stories that have been made up for a reason. They're being made up to have a very specific, you know, effect on people. And
it forces you to question legitimate journalism or question your actual reality.
Right. And when you look on Facebook's like biggest, most viral stories of the election, a lot of those were fake. So I don't think that was just 6%. It was like most of those stories like that had been read way more than any of the big, you know, bombshells that Washington Post had dropped and the New York Times had dropped that were actually based on reporting. A lot of those were fake. So, you know, just because it was only 6% of what they had read doesn't mean that it had a 6% effect on their mind share.
No, because even when I would see things that were blatantly fake, I was just like, wow, this atmosphere exists out there. Like, people are operating in this atmosphere, even if they don't believe it, right? It creates the idea that there are people who believe it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just as dangerous.
I mean, those people, that's my friend's mom. Like, you know, she'll post like those stories on, like, I'm pretty sure my friend's mom is one of those people who would post that Starbucks story and be like, look at what they're doing and look at this. Like, what do you have to say about this? And it's just like, this is from news.blogspot.com. Like, what are you doing? Like, you know, I definitely think I'm not surprised by.
Right. It's, again, I don't know. This could also just be straight up like Russian trolling too. Like, cause like, you know, if you think about the stories that were being pushed by a lot of these, like that, Russian agency, that troll farm were very like specific sort of things to like enrage like people with racist tendencies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this feels like a very similar thing, just to create more, you know, it just causing more tension. It's just, come on.
How much do you think these troll farms cost?
Man, they said, what did they, they did it with like a few million.
I might try to push them to like get people to talk about Nickelback. I think that the hate against them is too much, and maybe these trolls can help me
out. I agree. You know what I mean? Chad Kroeger.
I'm not saying that they're good.
I'm saying they're great.
But I'm saying, let's chill back on the hate.
All right. That's all the time we have. Real quick, wanted to correct myself on the Buffalo Bills thing, since this is the most pushback I've ever gotten on anything in the history of.
Oh, yeah. Also, people were coming at me. I don't watch the fucking NFL, everybody out there. I don't have a fucking opinion. So don't leave me the fuck alone.
Leave my family alone, you guys. you've come to my house. No. So I was only half watching that Bills game. I said the coach once again pulled Tyrod Taylor for Peterman, or whatever the backup quarterback's name was. He was
see,
pulled
in trouble again.
He was pulled this time because Tyrod Taylor was hurt, so he had to put Peterman in. I admit that I wasn't paying enough attention. It wasn't racially motivated this time. The reason I thought it was is, I mean, I don't even know if it was racially motivated the first time, but. You know, I was researching, you know, the bias against black quarterbacks in the NFL and college football, and, you know, had just read an article about how statistically black quarterbacks are way more likely to be pulled than white quarterbacks, like after only a couple mistakes. And then that weekend, Tyrod Taylor, who had something like 13 touchdowns and 5 interceptions on the season, was pulled in favor of this guy, Peterman, who then came in and threw a record-setting number of interceptions in the first half. But yeah, I cheapened my theory by bringing it up in the context of Taylor being pulled in the playoffs. So I am sorry, Buffalo. I'm a fan of your city. My granddad used to coach there when you had an NBA team.
Ooh,
I have a dope Buffalo Braves t-shirt. Shout out to Anita Sirwacki from Cracked, social media head.
Shout out to Bob McAdoo.
And shout out to Bob McAdoo. And yeah, so sorry, Buffalo. Edgar, it's been a goddamn pleasure having you.
Oh, I thank you.
Where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Awfulgram. You can find me on Twitter at Edgar Montplaisir. You can find me at the UCB Theater. I'm in a couple of dope shows right now. Hey, Miss. Sketch Showdown. So just look it up over at the UCB Theater. And also you can find me here on the How Stuff Works Network on the Culture Kings brand new podcast. It drops today, so
that's
please
right.
Go ahead and check it out.
It's out there.
You guys dropped episode 1 and then a couple other episodes.
And a couple of bonus episodes because we're nice dudes.
Exactly. Hard work.
It's a great show.
It is a really great show.
If you like this shit and you like Edgar, you've heard everybody, Jaquez, Carl now. They have their own show. So now you can hear them talk some fun shit.
Yeah.
Miles, where can people find you?
You can find me not watching the NFL. So if you got any, I don't give a shit. Okay. You want to talk about the Premier League? You want to talk about European soccer? You want to talk about Lakers? I'm here for that. I don't watch that other shit. So leave me the fuck alone. But if you're interested in my other thoughts, like on the movie Crank 2, things like that, find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray.
You can follow me at Jack_O'Brien. You can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter. We are at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page. And you can find our website at dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post all our episodes and footnotes, where we link off to all the articles we used as sources for this episode. And that's going to do it for today. Miles, do you have any music to...
Yes, so in honor, there was a story that came out about the Yeatoven 2 performance that's happening at the Lincoln Center in New York, January 18th, where these young guys were sort of flipping Beethoven and Kanye West together, which got me thinking, one of the best hip-hop string orchestrations that I personally love is Miguel Atwood Ferguson's Suite for Mott Dukes, which is based off a lot of Jay Dilla's work. So I wanted to play a little bit of that. This is Fall in Love from the Suite for Mott Dukes.
Awesome. That's going to do it for today. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. Talk to you then.
Crazy little things you do.